You're listening to Music Magnet Podcast for August 28th, 2011. Learn more at musicmanumit.com. Hi, and welcome to another Music Manumit. And today my guest host is Craig from the Open Metal Cast.
How are you doing?
And we have a guest as well with us today. We've talked about them in the past, and we've got Michael from Amity and Fame.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. And I want to make a full disclosure right here. I may very possibly say Amity and Fame because I do it all the time. I don't know why I keep thinking it's Amity and Fame, but I know it's Amity and Fame. So I just wanted to say, if I say that, please correct me because I want, I don't want to do that.
No, I won't correct you. We've had all different versions of our name already.
Yeah?
It's like some people say Amity of Fame, Amity to Blame. Now we're just making additional names up, like Animals of Pain or something. So you can add some versions of your own to this list.
We'll just call the band Frank from now on.
That works. Okay. I like that.
No, it should resemble to the original.
Okay.
Name.
Okay. Kind
of. Well, you can say Amity and Frank. Or I don't know.
So. Amity and Frank. What that makes me think of Anne Frank. So
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I could see that too. I could see it's just the rhythm of it. But for me, it's when I look at it, I see the word Amity, and I want to say it's because of the Amityville Horror movies, maybe. But that makes no sense. I don't, because it's not even the full length of the word. It's only like half of the word, if it were to be that. So I don't even know if that's Amity even a word.
I think it is animosity type thing.
Maybe. So what does, okay, speaking of that, what tell us about the name. What's what is with the name Amity? Ooh, I almost did it there. Amity and Fame. Where does that come from?
Yeah. Well, we were, as most bands, when we started, we were desperately looking for a band name that wasn't really already picked from a popular band. And it becomes pretty difficult to find such a name because there are so many bands. And yeah, we tried a long time to find something, and finally our guitarist Phil came up with the name, and I didn't like it because I'm no native English speaker, as you know, but I already saw that this name doesn't really make sense in a grammatical way, and that nobody would put these three words together in English that is a native speaker. But it had the big advantage that it wasn't used, and if you put it into Google or something, you immediately find our band, of course. And I liked the sound of it and the rhythm of the words put together, and so we just said, yeah, let's take it and think about something else than band names and write songs and stuff.
So and I mean, does it mean anything, or did he just like throw three words together?
No, he didn't. I think he's, but there are actually programs on the internet where you do something like that, where you just,
right.
I don't know, put one word in and you get a random band name. We tried that too before that, but it didn't work out well. So, but his intention was to have like more positive words. We're not like a death metal band where you have got to have one word that sounds like death or something in the band name. He wanted to have just like positive words. And yeah, something that sounded nice and meant something for him in that moment. So, but I don't know exactly what was his intention to use that, that words.
All right. Well, that's as good an explanation as any. I like that.
Yeah.
All right.
So who all's in the band?
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Presently we are, let's count, six people. We're, one man on the guitars, one bass player, one man on the drums, me singing and playing a bit of guitar, one man on the keys, and a girl doing, second vocals. And yeah, we're presently looking for a new drummer. That's a big problem at the present point. But yeah, normally we have a drummer.
Oh, what are their names? Just for curiosity.
Yeah, the drummer was Willie, but he left the band. The guitarist is Philip. The bass player is Roman. The second singer, the female one, is Nadine. And we had another female singer, but she left the band. She was called Judith. She sings on the first two albums. And the key player is Alex.
Okay. Very cool. And so far, you've only had two albums thus far?
We've only had two albums, but the band formed in 2008, so that's pretty good for us.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Get cracking. Make some more. No. Hey, Kraken. Isn't that the name of one of your albums?
Pardon?
Isn't Kraken one of the name of one of your albums?
Kraken is one title of the new album.
That's right. All right. Now I knew I saw the name on the website and then I said Get Kraken.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's one song. A deep cut.
Yes. speaking of the website, I wanted to ask you. I was checking out the videos that you have now. What went into some of the? I mean, like the pretty good production on there. Even though I know on the first one you're like, this is our low budget video, but I'm like, that's pretty damn good for a low budget. So what? How did those come about?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, everything we do is low budget because we don't have a lot of money. So. The video was basically, I don't know, it somehow suggested itself. Philip has written this song called Dinner for One. And it was basically the first song that was, really written in that spirit of, powerful acoustic rock. Because the older songs were more or less transitions of existing metal songs that he used with, distorted electric guitars. And, Dinner for One was the first song that he really wrote with his acoustic guitar, with his Variax, and said, okay, that's the first M.E.T. in Fame song that is really written in the spirit of powerful acoustic rock. And he just wrote and recorded the whole song in about 3 hours, so in one afternoon.
Oh.
And yeah, he's also written the lyrics to it, and I changed them a bit. So the song kind of suggested itself to both of us, just to make a video out of it. And we had similar ideas about these, you know, animals running around in this, you know, ambient of a, like a ballroom and fighting with each other about, human dinner, more or less. And yeah, the idea grew kind of, out of itself, and we just got some together who would work in the field of video production or just do it like hobby wise.
Mm-hmm.
And we just did it, you know, just a shooting with some friends in one day, basically. So we spent about 14 hours in these animal costumes and it was really just really funny to make and at the same time very productive because we didn't expect to really shoot the thing in only 14 hours. And yeah, there was a really big load of work waiting for the guy who would finally have to edit the whole thing.
Right.
But it turned out pretty well and we were pretty surprised by this first video production. We were pretty, you know, amateurs to this, of course.
Well, and what about the location? Like, how did you set that up? You know, yeah, like doing it in a ballroom or wherever it was that you shot it.
Yeah.
Tell us how you were able to, you know, let them let you do that wherever it was.
Yeah, it wasn't so easy because this ballroom normally can be booked, of course, by you know, organizations and companies who want to have like big parties or like the schools who do their balls there.
Mm-hmm.
And normally this is pretty expensive, of course. The whole ballroom is very big. It's in our hometown and you would spend at least some thousand euros, to rent the whole thing. And we just approached, the manager of the ballroom and said, yeah, we don't have that much money.
Normally, were you wearing the suits while you were telling them this?
Yes, of course. No, we didn't. But we already said, yeah, we only have like, you know, 300 euros, which is about $400. And normally you only get one room for that. And, but we asked nicely and got the whole thing. And we already told them that the filming of it would be violent. And so the manager, she was, I don't know, 25 years old or something.
Yeah.
And I told her just like, yeah, it could be we will use some blood in the shooting. And she was like, you know, her face dropped and what? But then we just limited ourselves to do, you know, a bit of fighting scenes without, of course, destroying anything or, you know, making the whole thing messy at the end of the day, but it worked out pretty well without the blood, the artificial blood or something.
So what did you do with all the artificial blood that you apparently had on hand?
Yeah, if you need anything, just
you have
just
it in bins out in the back of your house.
Yeah, I will ship it over.
I'm sure that would be perfectly easy to do. No, yeah, nobody would think twice about that. Okay.
I wanted to add, it was already too violent without artificial blood.
Yeah.
To
no, that's very true. Although it's...
Do you think it is? No, I don't think it is violent.
I don't... Well, it isn't in the sense that it's giant animals or giant people in costumes. So it just seems kind of like slapstick a lot
of
the
course.
Time. You know, I mean,
yeah,
seeing a giant, like, what is it, one of the bears, you know, being thrown over somebody's shoulder, and then, what is it, somebody else is dressed as a cow being carried up the, you know.
That's me.
Is that you? Okay.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, no, it takes the edge off. Whereas if it would have just been people beating the crap out of each other for no reason, it would have been like, why are they doing this? But for some reason, being in animal costumes, it's like, of course they're beating the crap out of each other.
What else? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, sure.
It just seems
to
make sense.
Of course, that's pretty usual these days. If you see like someone running around in an animal costume these days, you just suggest him to beat somebody up. It's like, I don't know if you know the show Trigger Happy TV. It was a UK show about 10 years ago. I think he initially started the whole thing, but it was in fact too violent for the Austrian National Music Television. They said, okay, we can play it, but we can't play it at the daytime. We have to play it in the night.
Huh.
And they always, okay, but what about, you know, dozens of boobs you see the whole day, I don't know if it's more appropriate to kids than like some furry animals fighting about something, but nevertheless, it was fun to shoot and we are pretty content with the video.
Well, okay, now Doug is usually here with me to do this show, and we have talked in the past about the Jamendo Awards. Now on the list of our we have a list of usually like 12 questions that we go through. Our boilerplate questions. Well, Doug has amended this list because he wanted to discuss the Jamendo Awards. So I have three specific questions I'm supposed to ask you from Doug. First of all, the first one is, how does it feel to have won the Jamendo Award?
It's great. We've been in this community since basically since we started. When we finished our first album, we've released this about a month after release, we put it on Jamendo, and you know, this portal was just so important for us because we now already reached about 20,000 downloads of our album. And you know, when you start a band, you don't expect to have, you know, 20,000 people really getting your albums in one way or another. And well, that's awesome for us. And the Jamendo was always present for us as a band, and we were very active there, also doing promotion for the band. And it's just really perfect that we've now won two awards. It's really great for us all.
Okay. That's a great answer. And
By the way, congratulations on those wins.
Thanks.
I know I participated in the Jamendo Awards as well, and your name may have come up several times during the course of the awards.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if you voted, Craig. I was just going to ask you that.
Yes, I did.
And I guess, and this is a question that both of you can answer too. Now, what are your thoughts on the way the awards were handled?
Yeah, do you want to start, Craig, or should I?
I'll let you start, and I'll fill in the blanks.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was a like test or something, I think. It certainly doesn't only reflect, you know, the common decision of the voting community. It certainly also reflects how individual band can mobilize their fans to vote. That is pretty clear to me. Mm-hmm. But that is the case in any voting you would do on the internet. And there are certainly ways to change like the voting process to make it a bit more a reflection of individual or common opinions and not of the ability of one band to motivate its fans. That's of course true, but yeah, that's, as I said, it's the case in any voting, and I'm really curious how the next Jamendo Awards will be organized. But I doubt that there's a way to make it much more fair than it was done this year. And yeah, Craig.
Yeah, the thing that I didn't like so much about it was the categories. The categories didn't feel very, very inclusive. There were certain the world music one. It's like, okay, what do you constitute world music? Is that everything outside of the United States? you know, it just
you mean the rest of the world music.
Exactly. You know, it's, you know, being from America, and it's like, oh, world music. Yeah, you know, that's the category where we put French music and all the rest of the stuff. And it's like, you know, that term is kind of meaningless to me.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And I think too, there were a lot of folks that were, I don't know, it felt a little less genuine. You know, if people like, you know, put things into the world music category and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And the way that it was handled, as far as, you know, okay, we had the runner up type thing where everyone, you know, voted for their individual categories, and then afterward you voted after, and I don't remember really what happened in the voting afterward period, because I kind of tertially followed that a couple times, but I don't know. There's definitely some room for improvement.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and I'm curious to know what they learned from this experiment. I mean, that's the way it felt to me. Like you said, Michael, is it seemed like it was an experiment to see, like, okay, how can we do this? One thing I hope they do is I hope they do make it yearly, like an annual yearly thing.
That would be awesome.
Instead of just like it's going to pop up whenever we feel like doing it again. You know, I don't like the idea of that if that's what's going to happen. And the other thing too, I have to agree with you, Craig. When it came down to the okay, here are the final votes or the people in this category. Like, I felt like there was less. I don't know. There was less drive for that one.
It was less energetic. Yeah.
Whereas the whole time it was like to get people into that category, everybody, I felt like I was going there more. And then when I heard, you know, it was down to the runners up or all, you know, whatever, how they did that, I felt like it was just kind of like, oh, well, you know, it kind of seems like it's already set, so I'll just leave it alone. You know.
Well, and the other thing that kind of bothered me too is the compilation artists, which.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't quite understand exactly how a label putting their stuff up on there constituted as one artist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I never thought of that.
Yeah. So,
that was criticized in the forum already. And yeah, I think it's understandable for every band who participates, you know, trying to motivate its fans or not even trying to, but relying on the community. That they get some votes, and then you have, you know, a massive, like, I don't want to say cartel, but you have a massive group of people who just only because it's like 10 bands with at least 5 members and who know so many people really having to participate in the whole thing. It's of course a big advantage for them, and it makes it for bands like, I don't know, Diablo Swing Orchestra, who were pretty much favorites for me in this whole contest. It makes it much, much harder for these bands to actually win in one category.
Right. Like Diablo Swing Orchestra, that's a perfect example, because, you know, I had already used up my votes in other categories, you know, for other specifically unnamed bands who might necessarily be on this call. So it's like, you know, where exactly do you put them? You know, and suddenly world music became this catch-all category.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just, okay, so here's the third question, and this is kind of getting back to the topic. So to confirm, you won in 2 categories. So that means you got $1,000 for winning 2, right?
Yep.
Okay, that was a question that Doug had, because he didn't know if you know, just winning meant that, like, okay, you won, so you got $500.
We didn't know 2. Yeah,
you got 2. Okay, and that's one thing. I remember we had a huge discussion about that, and I don't remember why it was such a huge discussion. It was just one of those things where, like, me and Doug were probably saying the exact same thing, but we thought we were disagreeing with each other. So anyway.
Sounds like a great discussion.
Yes.
No, you're completely wrong, you dumbass.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's a circle. No, it's pie. It's pie. No, it's a circle.
Yeah, so that question is on there that he just wanted to confirm that you got $1,000 for winning too. So now, What do they just send you a check, or do they have you know, somebody come over with one of those big novelty checks, or you know, how does that happen?
No, they dropped it in the park. Like we should pick it up at you know, at midnight, and there was this gloomy light. No, they just transferred it to the Gemendo account where you have your donations and stuff if you have some.
Oh, cool.
And yeah. And I've just it got to my PayPal account, to our band's PayPal account yesterday. So yeah,
now we
really have the money. We were unsure about it, but we had, of course, the belief that they would pay it, and yeah, they did, of course.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's, you know, for a band like us, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. For most bands, I would think
for
that
most
it
bands,
is.
Yeah.
So now, being on Gemendo, I mean, I don't know if this is maybe, and this is getting into our boilerplate questions that we like to ask on our interviews. And one of them is that, what drew you to Creative Commons?
I don't know where we started. We were pretty, experimental in any regard. And we just, you know, didn't have a very good opinion about the conservative music industry, of course, and as a newcomer band that just formed, you know, you don't expect to be considered by any label or something. And I don't know how we stumbled over Gemendo, over the idea of Creative Commons, but I don't know, somehow after releasing Dinner for One, or after finishing Dinner for One, we just found Gemendo and kind of, yeah, immediately jumped on this idea. And yeah, we didn't have anything to lose to put our music there. And yeah, it worked out really well, because, you know, you have the ability to really communicate with the Gemendo community. And yeah, we had a big big success story there, really, with now reaching 20,000 downloads. And nothing in our band history did so much positive things to us than joining Gemendo, really. Yeah.
And also, being in Germany, there's like the huge thing going on.
In Austria.
You're in Austria. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
No problem.
I was going to do a whole thing about Gemma.
You can't do it anyway.
that's true. I mean, it's but it's, you know, it's I know that there's been a lot of problems with the licensing of music out there.
Yeah.
And there's even a BMW campaign that's been out there. Yeah, there's where they're doing annual, I think monthly or something, like they're finding bands that aren't actually licensed under Gemma. And doing a mixtape of their music, cool. You know, bands under Creative Commons and things like that.
Cool. We had, you probably know the band Rammstein, German band.
Yes. Rammstein, I'm very familiar with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Tom doesn't. Okay.
let me pronounce it the American way. Rammstein.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know who you're talking
to. Thank you. Thank you, Craig.
No problem.
Yeah. And this band, really approached us via Gemendo that they would want to use a song of us and in their concerts.
Wow.
It was pretty cool. And basically they approached us after they played the song. So it was like only formal thing to say, yes, you can.
Wait, of course, you weren't actually at the show that they performed it at, were you? Because that would be very funny.
That is a funny story too. It was actually that Rammstein.
That's right. He knows it better now.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about now. He just needed to clarify it for me.
Yeah. They played in Prague, which is not far, which is in the Czech Republic, and it's not far from our hometown. And three band members, it was Phil, Roman, and Judith, who sang in our band before, they went to the concert. And, you know, they played in the O2 arena, and there were like, I don't know, 20,000 people in the stadium. And right before the support band started, the last song they would play from the PA, was our song. What song was it? It was Newborn Sun. It's on our debut album. It's the fifth song of our debut album, and they played it. right before the support band started.
Wow.
Oh, that is too cool.
It was so cool. And the three band members just, they recorded this, they recorded it on video too. And they were like sitting very, very far, from the actual stage on seats and not in front row or something. And so far from stage, most people are pretty calm before the concert. And the three band members, of course, jumped up from the seats and just screamed like they were totally mad. And everybody turned around and said, and looked at them like, just what happened to you? But of course, it must have been awesome for them to hear their own song from our band just in such a big, you know, arena played before the concert, and they totally freaked out, of course. And yeah, later Rammstein would ask they could use the song before the concerts, because they are fed up with, you know, paying licenses and GEMA and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's nice. a really cool story.
So now, speaking of that, and then another question we have is, we like to ask what the Creative Commons culture is like. From regions to countries, now that story being one where, you know, obviously they're fed up with it. I mean, what is the how many other people in your region are kind of supporters of Creative Commons, or has it really caught on, or, you know, what's it like?
Yeah, in Austria, it didn't catch on so far, really. We have a lot of feedback from Germany. There is like this party. It's called the Pirate Party. This party basically is present mostly in Northern Europe and Germany, and they really embraced the idea of Creative Commons. They are very much into, you know, into new licensing ways or non-licensing ways, like just giving out content for free. And there's really a community around the whole CC thing there, and also, of course, France. We have a lot of feedback from South America via Jamendo, and from Spain. Just also the Eastern countries like Poland, Russia. You see a lot of blogs there that just use CC music, or a lot of video makers who would use it. Also some professionals from the States. But in our home country, it's not really popular so far, and I hope this will change in the future, of course.
Yeah. Oh, so now, are there bands that you know of or that you play with that you know are also under creative? I mean, like locally, is there a lot of Creative Commons bands like where you are?
No, not at all. No, locally, we don't even know a single band who is really into CC. I know a band. It's called the Jimmy Hofer Band.
I love that
name. You should
check
them.
Yeah, that's a great name.
Yeah, it is also.
Pardon? I was just going to say, I want to make sure I'm hearing you right. Are you saying Chimmy Nova?
No, Chimmy Hofer.
Chimmy Hofer.
Hofer. It's just Hofer. That's just a very common Austrian last name.
Huh.
And it was founded by a friend of mine whose name is Michael Hofer.
Oh, okay.
And his friends call him Jimmy, and so he founded the band and said, okay, this is the Jimmy Hofer Band, and it's a very cool name. And
it was a
very cool band. Unfortunately, they split up, and but you should check them out on Jamendo, and they've also put their album on Jamendo after I've told them they should do so, and they have also 3,000 downloads and some pretty cool songs on the album.
Yeah,
we're gonna get one more after this.
Nice.
Pardon?
I said they'll get one more after this.
Yeah.
It is amazing how, I mean, Jamendo, I will say, is the community in there is just so great. I mean, there's way more downloads and traffic from things on Jamendo than I've seen anywhere else as far as bands posting stuff online. It's just really cool how things get discovered there. And the reviews, like, people will actually write reviews. It's not just the usual, like, hey, you know, because there's not like a... I mean, you know, there is the add a friend sort of thing there, but it's not like how it used to be on MySpace or stuff where it's like, thanks for the ad, and then you never hear from them again.
Or thanks for the ad, and here's my ad for my band.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. In there, it's like with the reviews, people actually will sit down and write reviews, like full-on reviews, like critique the songs and go, I liked this one, but I didn't like this one, but it's still a great, you know, and it, I still don't see that anywhere else except for on Jamendo. So I think that's really cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And the, now you were saying with, okay, now with the, I'm sorry, I'm going to say the name wrong again, Ramenstein. I probably even said it wrong the wrong way, didn't I? Is that, it is Ramenstein, right?
It is Ramstein.
Ramstein.
Okay.
Originally, it's Ramstein, yeah?
Okay.
It's Ramstein.
Yes, except I would never make it sound like that because I have a horrible dialect. So, now you said that you went to a show of theirs in Prague. You said that was where...
Yeah, okay. I wasn't there, but three band members.
Okay, yeah. And I guess my question would be, do you guys tour at all? And like, what are some of the places that you've gone to, if any?
We play live, but unfortunately, we didn't play much in the last 2 years, basically. When we started, we participated in a contest, basically, you know, a newcomer contest. And we played a lot of great locations there, like the finals. They were in Vienna, in the capital of Austria, and, you know, it was an open-air concert in front of about 5,000 people, which was the biggest concert for us. And yeah, we played a lot of great venues in the first year, basically. And then, yeah, we played some additional concerts, but then, you know, problems with our drummer started, basically. And it would be very difficult to actually, you know, plan a tour or something. And yeah, we also concentrated on the new album and on making the second video. And yeah, finally the drummer left the band, and now yeah, we have to wait to search a new drummer. And of course we want to play live again, but we were never that big of a touring band who plays like, you know, 10 concerts in a month or something. That wouldn't really have been possible.
I always feel like that's getting prepared for those things takes up more time than anything else. Yeah. Like it gets in the way of everything. I always feel like, and also when you said you played at the up and comer concert, how many people did you say were there?
Well, in the finals there were 5,000 people.
Nice, that's a good size show.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Wow, that's impressive. Yeah. You got it. Seems like now was this an outdoor event or
that was outdoor? Yeah, yeah. The semifinals were indoor, and there were about 500 people. And for me, it was even more impressive because, I don't know, the atmosphere was more intense because it wasn't that big of a place. You know, if you play on a large field where there are 5,000 people, that's not really that much because normally there would be place for 20,000 people there. But, the semifinals, were even more intense. From the atmosphere of the audience, I think. Yeah. But we also love, at least me and the guitarist, we love like small concerts where we play only acoustic with a cajon instead of a drum.
See, like, now that's the benefit
of, or something.
That's the benefit of doing acoustic metal, is that you can literally just kind of take it and go, okay, now we're going to do an acoustic version. We'll just get rid of the other instruments.
Yeah, of course.
Now, what do you do with the rest of the band when you do that? Is it just a couple of people, or is it still the full band, and then the other people just kind of sit there and air band? Or
well, No. When we played those gigs, the whole band participated. Okay. You know, the drummer just switched from full drums to cajon. Mm-hmm. And the bass player, the biggest problem was that the bass player is a big metalhead, and I think you pronounce it bass.
Or yes.
Yeah, the bass player is fun. Is a big metalhead, and he always just didn't like those kind of gigs, and like got a bit of a sour face on stage, and he would eventually say, "That was my last gig in acoustic. Now I only play real gigs, and we don't do that again." So we didn't do that now for a long time, but maybe the guitarist and me will just do acoustic gigs where only the two of us play.
Oh, you need to get him one of those big upright basses that he can dance around with.
Huh? See, the way I pictured it was...
I don't see that happening. I can't picture him around such a bass.
What I saw in my head was that, like, you guys all showed up, you know, with your acoustic stuff, and he showed up with like a full stack, behind them, you know. So you guys are sitting there playing, and then it's just like behind you. So yeah, that's what I pictured.
Yeah, that's great. It would be a clear statement from his side too, just like, okay, you can play these acoustic gigs, but I play the real gigs. Yes. At the same time. Nobody will hear you.
No, so what drove the band to take an acoustic route anyway? Because it's kind of unique. Your sound is kind of like I want to say it's like the Unplugged. I don't know if that made it over there, the MTV Unplugged thing where they'd have big bands over here like Alice in Chains or Kiss or anything like that do an all acoustic set, and it seems like you've kind of taken that to the next level.
Thank you. First of all, I have to clarify that I don't know. You have. You know, Europe is called the old continent, and I know it's a big ocean, but like bands like Pink Floyd and the MTV Unplugged series definitely made it over there.
No, I'm just
sink in the ocean. Just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, I mean, we don't get stuff like X-Factor over here and stuff like that. So,
well, we do now.
You don't? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It started this year.
I'm just gonna go out and slip my wrist now. Thank you.
I mean, really, X Factor.
You can do it inside.
I like how Simon Cowell left well, here it's American Idol, you know, the pop idol thing. He left that over here and started X Factor, and it's like, isn't it really just the same show? You just change the name.
Yes,
it's somewhat the same, except they do it in arena format instead of, like, you know, a private room, like, come sing for us. It's like, no, we're going to embarrass you in front of people this time.
That was the main improvements to the first idea.
That is really the only part of it I watch. Actually, I don't even watch that anymore, but the only thing I would watch is the tryouts. And then when it got to, like, the voting stuff, it's like, I don't really care who wins, so that's where I stopped watching, you know?
Yeah.
It's supposed to just be entertainment. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So
okay. So to answer your questions, your first question, if you say we take it to the next level, I don't know. I think it has been done in a pretty cool way already in the Unplugged series, or of course by other bands too. If I think of, I don't know, Days of the New or Riverside, they do similar stuff. But I think. Well, we would have to ask Phil about how he really came up with the whole idea, because it was basically his idea to play like his metal songs in an acoustic way. I think what is a big step forward is that it's really getting heavier. So I don't know, Days of the New is great acoustic music, but if I think of songs like The Kraken or Burning the Witch from the album, I doubt that there are any acoustic songs that are that heavy like those two songs. And you can correct me if you can think of something, but it's really just like kicking ass, although you don't have any distorted guitars. And well, Phil basically came up with the idea because he's just the person who would never be content with doing something that is just reproductive and not really innovative or something. He's pretty, you know, looking for new stuff and also isn't content with what he does. So he just wanted to, I don't know, get out of the metal genre. He did a very experimental metal album with, you know, influence from Pink Floyd and other rather experimental bands. But he didn't like how the songs he wrote sounded live. Partly also because he didn't have the right people to do it. And he just thought, okay, why not just try it in acoustic way? And then he got some guy playing the flute and sax. And he had a guy who play harmonica and stuff. So, and they all joined the band and created something really unique. And when I first heard the sound, I thought, okay, that's something that really interests me and I want to be part of that. And so the whole thing grew, and we just came to this concept of powerful acoustic rock, and the first album, Dinner for One, was basically just a transition of an existing metal album that Phil wrote, and the second album, Through, is just really 11 songs written in the spirit of powerful acoustic rock, and I think that's also pretty hearable on the second album, that this is really what we've defined the band to sound like. Yeah,
I'd say those, you know, songs like Haiku. I find myself absolutely headbanging to that song, and there's like not even a lick of distortion or whatever in there. It's just powerful stuff.
Yeah, it's really heavy.
and doing it acoustically too, I will say that the guitar definitely gets more. You get more of the low end. You're able to pull out a lot more of the low end on the chords that you're playing, rather than running it through a full on distortion. I feel like you can really. It just the sound that it gets is, especially if you're playing it more aggressively, or the intention of being aggressive on it. Yeah. It just seems there's a lot more depth in the sound of what's coming out of it, especially if you have. You know, double it up and everything. It just, it feels,
You have to get the CDs. The stuff that's on Jamendo, the 128 kilobit MP3s, do not do this album justice.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. it's nice pretty plug. Difficult. Yeah, and it's pretty difficult to create this sound on stage, of course, because, you know, you play with a lot of different PAs and with different, audio technicians, and it's pretty difficult to actually get the sound you have on the album really to impress people when you play live. But also, if it really works out, it mostly works out better than on the album, because we also had problems on the album to make it sound like we really wanted it. So I always say that the best sound we have is when we play in the rehearsal room, where everything just sounds like it should. And sometimes when we play live, we have also similar like circumstances and really can top the sound of the album, and that's very great.
So I had another question that's on our list that we usually ask, and I used to think it was a silly question because I was like, of course. This is the answer. Everyone's going to answer this the same way. But then we came across one person who's like, no, that's silly. Why would I want to do that? And I was surprised. The question is, is this or was this your full-time? Why is it or was this? Is this your full-time job? And would you want it to be?
It's not. It's by far not. So it's really, we're putting more money into the band than we get out of it. And we're in the lucky position that we just live in a rich country where you can, you know, have a daytime job and afford to have like a band and don't work that much in your daytime job and to have additional time for the band. So we really finance the whole band thing with working. And yeah, I don't think that this will change in the near future, that we get more money out of it than we put into it.
I think a lot of people think that or have come to that realization, you know?
Yeah. I think so too. I think 99% of all bands just really know that they won't earn anything with it. And they do it anyway because just they just love it.
Yeah.
And I also think that many people have the impression who don't play in a band that you earn a lot by making music. So, you know, you just meet persons you haven't seen in a while, and they say, hey, I saw your video on this, national music television. So is this your job right now, playing music? And you're just like, oh, God, no. it's a black hole that eats money, basically. No, it's not like that. But
it kind of is like that.
Yeah,
well, I think people equate fame with riches, and that, and it's like it's not the same thing.
That's a good point.
You can't cash fame.
No, and we're not famous. Besides, but also if you were, you can cash it, as you said. Yeah, that's true.
And if that were true, I mean, the guy who did Chocolate Rain must be a billionaire. You know, I mean, people know who he is, and he didn't make any money. You know, hell, he didn't even get advertising affiliation from that. You know.
That's bad.
But he's got a lot of internet money he can cash.
That's right. I was wondering if you were you're talking about the South Park episode, right?
Yes, I am.
I wasn't sure if that was going to go across or if either of you knew that, so I was just kind of, saying it in that vein.
I don't know the South Park episode, but I know Chocolate Rain, of course.
Yes.
But I think he can at least play live somewhere. I don't know. But
I think he might have. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, probably. God, such a voice on that guy. I love it. well, and the other misconception too is it is also now, or at least I get this because people still don't really understand it, but being Creative Commons artist, they think that that means, oh, nobody pays you for anything. Like, you give everything away, which I always have to tell them, no, that's not the case. We're just saying that you're allowed to do with the music what you want after you have it.
Yeah.
Essentially. And so, I mean, what would you say to people that have that assumption? I mean, how would you say, you know, you can do Creative Commons and make money? I mean, you're making money. At least as far as the most I know of, you've made $1,000. So
yeah, of course. that's very true. And we wouldn't have made those $1,000 by selling CDs anyway. So
right.
It's not so much the decision where you distribute your CD as a newcomer band, because I don't know, if you play live a lot and you sell physical albums, like you play 50 or 100 gigs a year. Also, if the audience is not that big, you probably sell like 10 or 20 CDs per gig, independently if you have, whether you have a label or you release it via Creative Commons. So you have that physical sale anyway. And we don't have, as we don't play live that much, but physical sale would not be the crucial point for us to decide whether to do it with a traditional label or a CC. And downloads is the same thing. I don't think that the new album, which we released in a traditional way, at least for the first part, I don't think that the downloads will be that much that it really pays to just release them the traditional way. And I don't know. I mean, you get some donations on Jamenda. It's not really much. I have to confess, we have 20,000 downloads, and the donations don't cover the production costs at all. So, but you know, if you're not in it for the money, there's no real argument not to release the album in CC.
Yeah,
and even you know, bands that already have millions of fans, like Radiohead or others, they just switch over to giving out the audios for free, or the Smashing Pumpkins or other bands who are established. So yeah, I think it's a misconception, really, as you said,
and
that you can't make money.
Well, and I love the argument for the Radiohead and the Nine Inch Nails and all that. It's so funny. I've heard that on both sides, you know, like they're like, yeah, but they're Radiohead. They don't need to have the money. And it's like, so you're comparing yourself to Radiohead and the fact that you're not going to make millions of dollars by giving your album away for free. Whereas the other thing too is being, you know, we're not Radiohead. So giving it away for free, you know, isn't going to be that many albums. I don't know. It's just, it's a weird conundrum, but the whole thing being everything's available online anyway, and people will get it.
Yeah.
However they want, if they want to, you know, whereas a lot of the times people will feel guilty for the fact that, oh, they're giving me an album, so I'm going to donate, you know, regardless of, you know, how much the money being, it's just the concept of it is that, you know what, they support you. And
of course,
you know, they don't need to download your album at all. So why go, hey, we're not even going to let you listen to it. Just buy it first, and then you can decide whether or not you like it or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, who, now this is a question that's always fun. We like to ask, who are some of your favorite bands, artists, or, you know, musicians, Creative Commons or otherwise, just like across the board? Like, what do you like to listen to?
If you ask the individual band members, you will get like 1,000 different bands. So I know that. Yeah. So the bass player is much into very experimental stuff, like Between the Buried and Me. I don't know if you know them.
Yeah,
it's a Canadian band. Yeah, it's a great band, but it's not my kind of music. And he's more into like Riverside and Liquid Tension Experiment and Dream Theater. And the whole thing.
My language.
Yeah. No, I like those bands too, but I'm not that much into it. And yeah, Phil, our guitar player, he has such a broad range of bands that he listens to. He also listens to like those new experimental bands like, you know, Liquid Tension Experiment and Dream Theater. And he also listens a lot to classical bands like Metallica or Pink Floyd was a very big influence to him. But also bands like, you wouldn't think a metal guitarist to listen to. He just listens to Sinéad O'Connor or Peter Gabriel and Genesis, a lot of different bands, also Austrian, you know, more folk bands or something like that. So and the drummer who just left the band, he was more into jazz. And yeah, it for me basically I don't listen to music that much these days. I listen to more like to individual songs. If I see something on Jamendo that is very good, or just like someone posts something new that I don't know, but the really biggest influence for me are the great 90s bands like, I don't know, Pearl Jam, A Perfect Circle, or the Smashing Pumpkins, basically. Huh. Bands like that. Yeah.
Nice. I like that. Do you you like listening to just the individual songs or things that are posted? That's really the way the music of the internet is. It's not like, yeah, hey, here's an album. It's like, hey, yeah, I love this song, and they post it, you know, or they share it. Yeah. I think it's frustrating sometimes on my end with my music
as
library.
As a musician, yeah.
Well, and as in my music library, when I go to listen to something, I'm like, oh, that's a great song. And then it's like, it's the only song I have by the band. It's like, I'd love to hear another one, but I have no idea what their album is, and that sort of thing. Especially with, you know, the mislabeling of things. I'll download a song that's awesome, and I have no clue who the band is because it's mislabeled or there's nothing there. So, but singles really are the way of the internet. I mean, if you look at it, and sometimes it's a good thing and a bad thing, such as, and sometimes both at the same time. Like if you look at the iTunes store, that LMFAO band or whatever that writes those ridiculous party songs, like one of their songs was like the number one downloaded. They like downloaded millions for this one ridiculous song that they had that was about, like, I don't know, not the Shots song, but they did a song that was basically about drinking shots, and the lyrics were shots, 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 shots. And it's like, really? Wow. Anyway, but they had like millions of downloads for this song. But if you go to look at their album, maybe 1,000 downloads of the album, you know, like everybody just wanted this song, and then they move on, and then they get sick of the song and they move on. So that can be a bad thing. But at the same time too, look at, you know, that's 99 cents a song. So that's a lot of money for that single, but their album is crap. So, you know, but they're making the money in the single, you know?
Sorry for interrupting. I just asked myself, who would buy the whole album? Like, okay, this is an awesome song, and the rest of the album must be like a perfect album. Who would think something like that? I don't
That's
know.
That's a good point. Okay. Yeah.
See, I'm the album guy. I buy the entire album, and I'll cherry pick.
Not from
if
this
I need
band.
To. Not from that band. No, I probably that band wouldn't even show up on my radar.
Yeah. No, they are the college frat boy equivalent of the band that did Who Let the Dogs Out. I don't even remember the name
my
of
God,
that band.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it is. It's just that their songs are more about like women taking their tops off and, you know, getting hammered. That's that, instead of just a catchphrase. But it is a catchphrase. But anyway, that was my point. I don't need to go into it anymore.
No, but as Craig said, I appreciate the people who really say, like Craig, the album guys, and as a band, I think you two play in bands or make music. As a band, you want these people because when you make an album, you have this impression of the albums you used to listen to. Just like, you don't think, okay, I'll make 11 songs and then just press it on one CD and that kind of puts together. You more or less think, okay, we're working on this album and writing songs, and at the end of the day, this should be like a whole piece of art that just fits together and that just evolves during each and every song. And you create this, you know, cover artwork around it, and you just really want that the people who would hold that album in their hands finally would perceive it as you perceived the albums that you would listen to when you were younger, just like I don't know. For me, it was Melancholy and The Infinite Sadness from The Smashing Pumpkins was a big inspiration. And I just, you know, had these albums in my hand for about 5 months every day and listened every day to it. And, you know, you really have a picture of the whole album. And as a musician, you want the people to perceive it that way and not just like have one song that gets a bit popular and the rest of the songs just like I've completely forgotten.
See, yeah, I will say that I have moved on to the digital album, though. I mean, and I do appreciate and I think it's very important for physical packages to stay alive, and you know, and new creative ways of doing that, and making them more special, so people will buy the physical versions. But I will say that I came from a time period where when tapes and CDs were the norm. And, I, you know, lugging them around, basically my car became a giant, music folder.
You had Sam Goody riding around in your passenger seat.
No, I literally had a seat that was called the Virgin seat because nobody could sit in it because it's where I kept all my CDs and tapes. Now, the problem with that is that you take one sharp turn and the whole thing comes toppling over. And then next thing you know, I mean, I've got broken CD cases. People are stepping on them when they get in the back seat, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. So when the very first...
Pardon, were there any other CD cases than broken ones? I just remember
that's true. That's
like you buy them and they fall down and they're broken immediately.
Yeah, the broken gel cases, and then you'd swap them out for other ones, and then you'd switch them and interchangeable. But I mean, then when the very first like 5 gig MP3 player came out, I bought it right away, and I was loading as much music on that thing as I could, and I couldn't believe that like 5 gigs actually wasn't enough for me. But then moving on from there, it's like I like being able to carry it around, and it's like, oh, here's my whole thing in my hand. So I will say that that's, I like that, but only because I like to take my music with me everywhere. Whereas now a lot of the online storage is making that, you know, another thing where I don't have to even do it that way. I can just have it in one place where I don't have to save it on a device, which technically you play it through the device, but still you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But, and yeah. I know I'm just assuming this from what you're saying, but I think Craig, you're saying that you're a physical ownership guy, correct?
I still have a lot of physical CDs in that. I do buy, on the occasion, I'll buy a digital album, but more often than not, it's usually I'll buy the digital album and then later on I'll find it in a CD store and I'll snap it up.
Hmm.
I'm a freak, I know.
I don't think that's flack. Too freakish. I think that makes a lot of sense. I actually the other day got a hankering for the Pixies' Surfer Rosa album. And I was out and I was just like, oh, I bet you I could find this at this store. And it's like, I have the album on the digital album. It's just, I wanted to listen to the CD in my car. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
And what else I found freakish too is that people, and I know certain friends of mine have, you know, like One Faith No More song. It's like Epic or right. Midlife Crisis. And it's like, you know, the rest of the album is just so awesome. And they're just completely missing out on it.
Does anybody else listen to the very first one when they had the narcoleptic singer that was in the band?
No, I missed that one.
Okay, yeah, the very first album before what's his name?
Mike Patton.
Thank you. Before he was in the band, they had a singer, and it was a very very different band. And the singer was they got rid of him because the problem was they couldn't tour because he was like a hardcore narcoleptic, like he could fall asleep instantly. So they basically, it became a problem with touring, or at least this was the story I was told.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, it was the '90s, crazy times, lots of drugs. And so that was the concept. And that first album is actually, they had one video for it that was on MTV that I remember seeing. And then, somebody I knew got the album and I was like, yeah, this is, it's really weird. It's very bizarre because it's bizarre in the sense that it's actually pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
So, which you didn't expect from, and even I didn't think that the very first Faith No More album was that out there. But later on, and when Mike Patton actually started, you know, making a new band every 5 minutes of his own, they started getting weirder and weirder. And then I was like, okay, now this is the messed up. Everybody else was like, oh, this is so crazy. And I'm like, no, I've heard tons of stuff like this. And basically the bass player listened to Flea on Red Hot Chili Peppers and learned how to do slap bass. You know, it wasn't that out there, the first album. Or technically the second album, but then they just got crazy with the time signatures and the Japanese.
And Mr. Bungle started coming into Faith No More, and
and the Japanese scream performance, or you know, all that stuff that he started adapting, like the Kato Hideki type stuff, and I don't know. Okay, I just went off on a huge rant about Faith No More. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. But that's of course on the list from our bass player, Mike Patton, and I don't know what his project was called when he did these interpretations of like soundtrack songs. What was it called? Rosemary's Babies.
Oh, right. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, the one where it was all sound movie soundtracks. I don't remember what it was called, but I have a friend who owns that. It's very much like the guy that did the Naked City CD. I've actually listened to a lot of both of those, the one that I'm mentioning that I don't remember and the one that you're mentioning that I don't remember. But I used to listen to those quite a bit. Those are actually pretty entertaining. When you're doing one that's based on something and not just like going, okay, let's just do a concept. The concept, it makes it a lot more tolerable and even interesting sometimes.
I think that's the secret of many art pieces. Just like, okay, that's a painting that just looks like crap, but what's the concept behind it? And then you would hear something very abstract, and you say, okay, that makes sense now. And I think it's the case on many art colleges that it's not that much about the actual product or what is visible afterwards, but about the idea behind it. And that makes some things a bit more bearable or a bit more interesting to have like a good explanation why you did that crap.
Yeah. Why you did that crap. I like the way you summed that up.
I just didn't find the proper word in English, you know.
No, you did.
That's perfect.
That worked. Okay. Well, do you have anything else you'd like to ask, Craig?
Well, I've noticed too that the album Through isn't released as Creative Commons, and I was wondering if that might change in the future.
I hope that it will change, because we had a discussion within the band, and I don't want to tell any names, but different people wanted to have it on Jamendo, and different other people wanted to have it the traditional way. And I think it's good that we first decided to have it the traditional way, because we just wanted to try out, okay, now we had an album on Creative Commons, and the second album was pretty expensive, so we had to spend, $8,000 or a bit more, to make the whole thing. And the band purse is more than empty. And we thought, okay, maybe if you release it the traditional way, we could get some money into it. It was, you know, also the common misperception that you earn more if you release it, in the normal way. And we don't know yet if this will work out in any way. And it was just, you know, an experiment for us. And if it doesn't work, and if we really don't get money into it, but this, we hopefully will put it on Jamendo again, but this will not happen in this year and probably not in the next year. I don't know. And also one thing that I wanted to add to the discussion before, we had a lot of people telling us, okay, we really love the album and we would buy a physical album. And our idea was for the new album that we wanted to sell it physically, as we just considered it as a whole package with the cover artwork that a friend of mine did, and it was very expensive too. And we wanted it to just that the people had it in their hands and just saw the whole thing. And a lot of people told us, okay, we've downloaded it. Now we won't buy the physical version, because why should we? And we really love your music, but if it's online for free, we won't buy it. But we would buy it if it wasn't online for free. So we thought, okay, let's just see if it really happens and some people buy the album if it is not online for free. But we still have to figure out if this did really change anything. And I would like to see the album in, I don't know, 1 or 2 years on Jamendo 2 in order to reach just as many people as possible.
Yeah. So people are full of crap, actually. I think people are sometimes full of crap when they say, "Oh yeah, well, you know, they'll pick it up for free and that'll be the end of it," which I don't like personally. Yeah. I like to support artists.
And it's kind of like an experiment in what we were talking about before, like you were saying. And I'd be very interested to hear what the outcome is. You know, I guess I don't know when the cutoff line would be for defining whether it was successful or not. But, you know, it would be interesting because I know I have that discussion with the guys in my band all the time about whether or not we should download it or sell it. Whereas, you know, my guitar player is very much so like he doesn't get it. Not that he doesn't get it, but he's not really an online guy. He just kind of remembers the way things were, and he doesn't. Oddly enough, he can run any kind of software, but when it comes to the internet, he's kind of green. So it's very interesting to see his reaction, and the you know, the whole thing being like he doesn't get it, but he's like, okay, you know what you're doing. I know that you do a lot of web development and junk like that, so he's like, I'll trust you on it. But at the same time, too, I know he kind of doesn't. So yeah, I've had that discussion many times, and it's just the fact that since I'm in charge of our website, then he has no say about it. But still,
yeah,
that is an interesting thing that I'm sure is just a common way of thinking all the time. Like, you know, should we just do physical? Should we do digital, et cetera? I mean, I know there is one way. Like, if you are able to sell it online, that people can get when they buy it. Like through Bandcamp, because I'm actually setting up a store for a physical EP right now. Whereas when they buy it, then right after they pay for it, they get an instant download of the album, and then you can also add a bunch of bonus stuff along with it. And then it, you know, it says, okay, and your album will be there in 5 days. In the meantime, enjoy this, you know, ripped copy of it, which you get to control all the tagging on it and all that, so they get one that's set up by you, so you don't have the misnamed rip thing or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's another alternative to go as well. I don't know if you were, you know, aware of those. Okay.
Yeah, I've been off Ben.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I think.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I think so too, because you said just like your band member doesn't get it, which is a hard way to put it, but I think we all have to, like, you know, just adapt to the new forms of technology, and then it doesn't make any sense to say, okay, in former times, you know, Norah Jones sold 40 million physical copies of her album, and in the 70s bands got big by doing that and that, and in the 90s you just had to be in Seattle somewhere near a bar and wear jeans that were ripped off and you would get a record deal because, you know,
also your band just had to adapt to the grunge sound, which a lot of bands did.
No, I don't know if that would be necessary in that time. I think grunge was a rather wide expression, because I don't think that all those grunge bands had a very common sound. I don't know, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, it's three completely different.
No, I know. I'm saying the bands that were big in the 80s who all of a sudden were like, well, why is no one listening to us anymore? And then they would come out with their grunge album. It was like when bands came out with their disco album in the 70s. Like Anthrax. Anthrax did that one album where they got rid of the singer and then they got the new singer, and all of a sudden they were a grunge band.
Oh, well, they familiar? Weren't necessarily a grunge band. They got John Bush instead of Joey.
Right.
And it wasn't too grunge, but it was definitely different.
It was a departure.
It was a definite departure, and Sacred Reich also did. They didn't do the same thing, but Metallica did the same thing.
Corrosion and Conformity did the same thing.
Corrosion did, yeah. It's like,
Yeah, strangely, we are also compared to grunge at times. So a lot of... Yeah, a lot of people say, okay, that reminds me of grunge. I don't know. I don't think.
I think it's the unplugged shows. Like, I think it was like Alice in Chains, because that was one of the first things that came to mind.
The unplugged. Maybe.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So it still has that heaviness that.
Yeah, that's true.
That's coming through.
That's okay. No, dead,
I know.
Right?
I know. Yeah.
Well, Lane Stanley is long gone.
Okay. Yeah. I thought so. I couldn't remember.
No, there was a second singer of Alice in Chains who died pretty recently, didn't he? I'm mixing.
I think they got a second singer whose name is escaping me right now. I can picture him. And I don't know if he died or not recently. I don't think so.
And didn't, oh, after he died, didn't they do like the Temple of the Dog thing where the guys from Alice in Chains and some of the guys from Pearl Jam
and South Gap.
What was that?
Chris Cornell was there too,
right?
From Soundgarden.
Well, and that was the Temple of the Dog thing. But then I know. Yeah. Oh wait, no, I'm thinking of when the singer went into rehab, because there was some spin-off band that was done with the guys from Alice in Chains, and I don't know if it was after the singer went to rehab or after he died. And it was I can picture the cover of it. It wasn't very popular, but it was like a black cover with it looked like a white sketch on it or something like that. I don't know. Never mind. I shouldn't bring up things I know nothing about. And speaking of that, the album we were trying to think of before was called Director's Cut by Fantomas, was the name of the
Fantomas,
band.
Fantomas, okay. Yeah. Did you Google that?
Yeah,
now?
Yeah, I did. And the band I was thinking of was the artist John Zorn did the album Naked City, which was very similar.
Ah, yeah.
And that's what it was based on. Actually, the album he collaborated with John Zorn on the making of this album. So their stuff is very similar.
Okay. Alice in Chains. Wikipedia. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Wikipedia.
William Duvall's their new singer. However, they lost their bassist, Mike Starr. That's what we're thinking of.
All right. So he died recently.
Yeah, their bassist died.
The kids need to get off the drugs, I'm telling you.
I know.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like a personal experience or something. I know. Yeah. I had to learn it the hard way.
Exactly. Yeah. I just said at the end of the show, we usually like to wrap things up by saying, Michael, is there anything else you'd like to talk about, mention, tell us about, say hi to your mom, anything like that before we leave?
No, my mom probably won't listen because
it's
worse than mine. But no, it was a very pleasant interview, and maybe we'll talk to each other in some time in the future, and I can report what happened to, you know, our experiment to release the album in the traditional way. And awesome.
I'd like to hear about that. And thank you very much for coming on. And Craig, thank you for joining me and being my second guy to correct me when I say stupid things.
Thank you.
Because,
it's always a pleasure.
Because I need that.
But wait, one thing to add. I'm interested about your bands, and this would be an opportunity to make some promo for them.
oh, God.
For you. So you just tell me the names and I will check them out.
You go first, Craig.
My band was Black Cat Chiquita. It was back in 1993. I haven't been in a band since, unfortunately.
Do you have it online? No,
it's not online. I don't think I could even get a hold of all the members to even put it online. It might get pirated someday. But.
Well, and mine is called Lorenzo's Music.
Okay, which is the only band that's using the Creative Commons tag on Bandcamp, or one of a few.
Yeah, that's true. We actually do get searched for that a lot, and I've looked, and there's like maybe 10 on Bandcamp that does it. So, right. And we have a new, like I said, we have a new EP that's actually being released sometime this week as soon as I get all my stuff in order. Basically, it's just pending on me getting my stuff together and getting it online and setting up the store and all that fun stuff. Cool.
And, yeah, I know what you're talking about. But you have it on Chamando too?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, we'll check it out.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, and it was great talking with you. And again, congratulations on the Chamando Awards. And I forgot to ask, do they send you a big physical award that you get to put down there, or is it just like an internet badge?
Not so far. We don't even have an internet badge now that you mention it.
That's another thing they should do.
Yeah, but I read people writing about it in the forums that they all already had some picture in their minds, I think, how it looked like. But I don't know if it was completely their fantasy or if something has been mentioned. I hope we will get some awards still.
Well, if it's on the internet, I'm sure it's true. So so thank you for joining us again, and this has been another Music Manumit podcast at musicmanumit.com.